obviously old enough to know better, had to go while he was out in St. Petersburg.
Oh, no.
Presumably partying. So he whipped it out and went to work on the rear bumper of a marked police car. Maybe it was a political protest. Maybe he'd had a few drinks. Either way, police note that he was handcuffed, quote, while still in the commission of the crime, and that he was uncooperative with questioning. Somebody put up $250 to get Johnson out of jail.
Oh, no.
Do not, kids.
Pee on a police car.
Pee on the police car. I've told you this story. There is a state police barracks on Commonwealth Avenue in Alston next to T. Anthony's Pizza. And I was walking up to T. Anthony's Pizza one night. It was a Friday or a Saturday night. This is WMFO Medford. And I saw a guy walk over to the back, to the side of the police station and whip it out and just start urinating on the police station. Would have been all good, except two cops came walking out of the police station at about the same time, saw what was going on, yelled, hey, and ran over to him.
As one does when they see you're a cop and yes. You see some
people. As I was in T. Anthony's getting my pizza, I was watching him be frog marched into the police station. The cops don't like that.
It
is a crime. Kids.
It's a crime, and like beyond that, it's a crime. It's like you are literally pissing on. Or sorry, I can't say that.
It's okay.
You're literally pissing on the police.
Yeah. Beyond
the fact that it's illegal, they're going to take that as a bit of a symbolic gesture.
Yeah.
Anything.
Yeah. They're like, wait a minute. Well, we don't deserve this. You know? So, be nice to the cops.
It's like a double middle finger.
Your turn, because I've been dominating this conversation so far.
My turn.
Yes, local news, community, like any.
Let's see. This actually is close to my heart, only because for two reasons. One, I remember this very clearly and followed it very closely. Two, I dated a guy while he was here from California because of this. So I remember it quite often. According to NBC News, Columbia Gas, which is the utility behind the deadly 2018 Merrimack Valley gas explosions, will pay a $53 million fine and be sold by its parent company, NiSource, after agreeing to plead guilty in connection with the disaster. U.S. Attorney Andrew Lelling said in a press conference today that Columbia Gas had agreed to plead guilty to felony violation of the Pipeline Safety Act after a federal investigation found wholesale management failure at the utility led to the disaster. NiSource has agreed to take steps to sell off Columbia Gas, and this I thought was very interesting, stop doing business in Massachusetts altogether.
They were kicked out. That was one of the findings. They were banned from operating in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts.
They literally can't do it anymore. For those of you who don't remember, the September 13th, 2018 gas explosions killed 18-year-old Lionel Rondon and injured 25 others, setting more than 100 homes on fire and displacing 8,000 people in Andover, North Andover, and Lawrence.
Now, very...
And this, when this story broke, this was all you were hearing about.
Yeah.
Like, this was, it's rare, I don't want to say rare, but it doesn't happen too often that a Massachusetts story that, like, directly affects Massachusetts residents is national news. I had people from all over the country getting in touch with me saying, you don't live near, what is it, Andover?
Yeah.
Like, this was a big freaking deal.
I live on the edge of the Merrimack Valley, and it was, you know, you could hear the helicopters where I was because the sky was full of them. And I just remember that afternoon there being this sense that something has gone horribly, horribly wrong.
Yeah.
You can feel the it was like on 9/11. You can feel the tension.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, yeah, exactly. I was going to say it was just like on 9/11 where you could feel the.
Yeah. And because houses are blowing up left and right and people are running around shutting off the gas going to people's houses so they won't blow up. Very, very late this afternoon, it was announced that Eversource, your local gas company, will be buying the assets of Columbia Gas for $1.1 billion. So There's an interesting aspect to this that doesn't sit well with me. Okay. How much do they fine Columbia Gas? Like
53 million.
Right. So they've been fined $53 million and they've been kicked out of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. But they're leaving the Commonwealth of Massachusetts with a $1.1 billion payday.
They really should have
for their assets
handed that
you,
on.
You know what it should be? You are going to forfeit your assets to a local company and you are not going to be reimbursed for them. That's your real punishment. Is your company behaved so recklessly that we're just taking this away from you. Not here's $1.1 billion. Don't come back here again.
Don't come back.
I'll take that deal. I'll take that. I'll blow up a chunk of the state for that deal. I'd love to have $1 billion.
Yeah, $1 billion sounds super nice.
This is why people get upset with corporations and you know.
It's one of those things where I think about, like, that's 8,000 people. Think about how many people that is. Like, just being complete, like, their lives were so screwed for, like, way longer than they should have been. If anything, that money should have gone, it should have been settlement money to those people.
Yeah.
Like, God. But, I mean, it's nice to see that there is at least some resolution to it. Because that's one of those things I've just kind of had in the back of my brain for 2 years now. Just like, or for a year and a half, I suppose.
But it seems wrong to me that they get to
just kind of leave with their tail between their legs and $1 billion in their pocket.
You're getting $1 billion. You're not responsible for any of this infrastructure anymore. So you can get rid of all the costs that you have associated with being up here in Massachusetts. How is that not a net gain for this corporation? Yeah. How is NiSource not coming out ahead in this whole thing? Because I tell you this much. They spent less than $1 billion settling all of this, to the best of my knowledge. I mean, you got the $53 million fine there. We don't know how much the Rondon family got.
Well, and let me look at this now.
Wasn't there a $160 million settlement with the state?
Yeah. What was it going to say? Well, and now I'm looking at it. All right. NiSource.
Give me one second.
NiSource operates 7 local utilities in its service region. We're one of 7. The other ones are Indiana, Ohio, Kentucky, Pennsylvania, Maryland, and Virginia. I'm not seeing us as their biggest commodity here. Like, them losing Massachusetts, yeah, it stinks for them, but they're not, in the grand scheme of things, I don't think this is very much skin off their arshrabula.
They've blown stuff up in 2 of those states, too. Going back to an earlier topic, Chris is with us. Chris, nice to have you back on the show. Chris, you with me? We had Chris.
Chris?
Why don't I hear Chris anymore? This says
hey,
it's...
Hey, Chris, you're this so
says
fine.
It's on.
You're so fine.
Yeah. And the thing's doing the thing.
Is it working?
Chris, we got you now?
I can get you on preview. I can't get you live on the air, which is a weird thing. Yeah.
This is very odd.
Chris,
can you hear me?
So this is different. Okay, so Chris, I'm going to tell you to call me back in just a minute. I'm going to disconnect. Because here's the thing. I know how to do this. Interesting. Let me clear the channel.
Clear the channel.
And see if we can't get this to behave itself.
It is a very temperamental board. Derek has a love-hate relationship with this board.
It's not normally temperamental. It's, well, you know, part of the problem is the idiot trying to operate the board doesn't know what he's doing half the time. All right. We'll set that to that. All right. So
set that to that.
We'll see if that comes back. Tell me that NiSource didn't make out on this whole thing.
Oh, yeah. They're basically, I mean, coming out as unscratched as possible.
Yeah, this is why people sit around and they say there's no justice. You know, justice would be, hey, guess what? You forfeit everything. We're taking away all of your assets and we're giving them to a local company that hopefully won't kill people. All right, let me try just doing this.
All right, Chris, can we get you? Is this going to happen?
Can you hear me now? Chris, are you with me? I know how to answer
the
phones.
Flint Mode Squad. I was going to say, no, I remember watching you do it in the past. And
yeah,
the things that are supposed to be lit up are lit up.
Press once for flashing. Mic one on. Phone on air. On button. For whatever reason, this phone line is not doing what it's supposed to be doing.
That's very disappointing because Chris always has something good to say.
Yeah.
So I assume you can hear me now.
So this is not for lack of trying to put Chris on the air. We are absolutely, for those of you who don't know what,
Give me 2 minutes, I'm going to throw it on a different channel, see if that helps.
I would say for those of you who don't know like how this works is like our phone calls come into our radio board and for some reason it's being very finicky.
This is quite irritating. I've got to find a channel that okay, CD1, we're not doing anything with that. But before I can do that.
Now I have the song Papa Can You Hear Me stuck in my head, so there's that as well.
I got to do this and set that to a different line. Really, nothing here is simple, is what it comes down to. We don't even need that. That goes. I'm sure this is thrilling for our listeners. I saw a great headline this week that I absolutely adore. Why is this not even giving me the option for phone? Aux 1, aux 2. I see everything here. Are the phones locked? I have no idea what this thing is doing anymore.
Now Joel's standing behind
me. Yeah, now I got Joel standing behind me, which is not helpful. maybe you can figure out how to actually get a caller on the air. Because
I'm sorry, I'm just standing behind you being not helpful.
Yeah, it's not working at all, and I can't seem to get, I can't even seem to get a phone line on that channel. Let's see if this channel, okay, so the phone lines show up on this channel. Maybe this one is going to behave better than the other one. Bizarre. Oh, you know what I could do?
Could we call him?
Yeah. You know what I could do is just zero out the board.
Zero out the board.
Yeah. I'm doing a hard reset on the board. So this will fix everything, allegedly. Okay. So let's see if that works.
Chris, call us.
We've reset everything on the board and we'll see.
Just for you.
Yeah. Okay. I love this headline. They've taken it off the air. Hot Pockets heiress sentencing for prison time in college admissions scam.
What's up?
The Hot Pockets heiress was being sentenced for prison time the other day. WMFO. Chris, is this you?
Yeah, it's me.
Hey, there we go.
We can hear you. This is so exciting.
All I had to do was a global reset. Global reset on the board fixes everything.
Feel freaking special, Chris.
Yeah.
Resetting often works and everything.
Yeah.
It's just, if you've ever seen the show, The IT Crowd, they answer the phone. Hello, IT. Have you tried turning it off and on again?
Yes.
Yeah. Reboot it first.
So.
It doesn't work the first time, reboot it the second time.
Hey, you called in while we were talking about Marty Walsh, and I asked you to check back in with us. You know, I don't want this guy running our coronavirus response. How do you feel about it?
Well, I have the answer to what you can do if you don't want to worry about getting the coronavirus.
Leave.
So, no, it's actually much simpler than that. It's the same reason why there's a cold and flu season. Actually, it's every infection is seasonal. And the reason is astoundingly simple. Why the medical profession doesn't know this, I don't know. But our immune systems can't function without vitamin D. And once the sun gets too low in the sky in the fall and the winter, we no longer get it from sun exposure. In the spring and summer, we go outside 15 minutes, sun hits us for 15 minutes, we get 10,000 units of vitamin D made from ultraviolet hitting our skin. That's why light-skinned people have light skin because when humans migrated to the temperate zones, if our skin didn't turn light, we'd die from vitamin D deficiency.
Right.
So what I do is I take 10,000 units of vitamin D year-round because that's how much we get from 15 minutes of sun exposure. In the summer, I try to avoid the sun because I don't want to get the sun damage. Because I take that, I never get sick.
Hmm.
Also, if you get as much sleep as possible, like 8 to 10 hours a night,
not happening.
That really strengthens your immune system.
Not happening. Now, I got a kid on the way. Definitely not happening.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is a bad time for Derek to attempt that.
If I got tired, I would get sick every time. But once I started taking the vitamin D, now when I'm forced to go without sleep because of circumstances beyond our control, these things happen, I don't get sick.
Yeah,
because I have the vitamin D.
That makes perfect sense, really, because you think
it really makes a difference.
If you think about it, I mean, it's not like the actual cold. It's not like these actual germs themselves like the cold. If you look at any scientific study about, you know, like germs, viruses, things like that, they actually don't live as well in the cold. But it does make sense that we're getting less vitamin D.
Something else that's kind of related to the cold. I just read this study a few weeks ago. They discovered that for some reason, when the humidity indoors is 43% or higher, it somehow alters the protein structure of the viruses so they can't attach to our cells.
Hmm.
Now, in the wintertime,
it's bone dry.
The effects of indoor heat makes it like 10 or 15% humidity, as dry as desert, because the air outside, you know, and it's cold, it doesn't hold much moisture, so the dew points are low. Then you heat that air, and you get really low humidity. So now they've discovered that if you raise the humidity up, it will stop the viruses from being contagious. So that's the answer.
That's what I'm saying.
To low vitamin D. We all are exposed to all this dry air inside in offices and schools and homes, and that makes all these viruses much more contagious, whereas in the summer, it's usually too humid. So all you got to do is keep the humidity up to 50 or 60% in your homes and offices so that those viruses won't be so contagious. Take 10,000 units of vitamin D every day, and as a precaution, it usually comes in soft gels, you know, little soft things that are supposed to dissolve easy as vegetable oil because the vitamin D is dissolved in vegetable oil. I don't care whether they're supposed to dissolve. I bite them open just to be sure. And every vitamin I take that comes in a solid pill, I chew it up. I don't care if it tastes yucky. You can always mix it in with food or juice or tea or whatever. All I care about is I want it to absorb. Because if you don't chew up the solid pills, they just go in one end and out the other. So I get the benefit of this stuff, and it really works.
Mm.
You can also take vitamin C, like 500 milligrams morning and evening, because if you're getting a virus, that'll help fight it off. If you are taking a multivitamin that has minerals and has zinc in it, you're all set. If not, then you probably have a little zinc deficiency, and if you're worried about catching something, you can also take like 20 milligrams of zinc a day.
There we go.
Those are the things that protect you. Vitamin D is the most important because literally the immune system can't work without it. And that's why every year people die and get sick because they don't know that it's from a lack of vitamin D. So if you take that 10,000 units of vitamin D every day and you get sleep when you can, you're not going to get these things. And if you keep the humidity up, you also won't get them. And I don't do any of the stuff that people do. I'm not washing my hands all day. I'm not using hand sanitizer. I'm not wearing masks or gloves or any of this crap because my immune system is so strong, I don't get any of these things.
Nice.
I don't.
All right.
Because I take the vitamin D, and when I can, I get to sleep. But the vitamin D really works. And I experimented over the years, and I found if I went below 5,000 units, I still got sick. So I kept it up to 10,000. Several years back, I read a study that said if you took 8,000 units or more a day, they did a big study on a lot of people, and they found that 8,000 or more of D lengthens the telomeres, which are the ends of the DNA strands in the cells. Those strands shortening is what causes cellular aging and breakdown.
Yep.
So any of the things you can do that lengthen them are great. So when I saw that, I said, oh, that's just another reason why I'm going to take 10,000 every day.
Excellent.
If anybody tells you it's too much, it absolutely is not. We literally get that much just from 15 minutes of sun on our face and hands. It's not too much. It's fine. I'm actually probably getting about 11,000 because there's also some D in my multivitamins and some in the calcium. So, you know, I'm getting at least 11,000 every day. And it's great. It really keeps you healthy. It does about 30 other things in the body, too, and they keep discovering more all the time. So while the RDAs are probably 2,000, that's nowhere near enough. And the amount that's in stuff like milk or ordinary vitamins is like 400, which is a complete joke. It does nothing at all.
All right.
So that's really the answer. You take the vitamin D, bump up the humidity, try to get as much sleep as you can, and you won't get this stuff.
Sounds good.
And other people won't get it either. It could save lives every year. Drug companies don't want anybody to know this because they'd rather make a fortune selling all these vaccines. I never get the flu vaccine because there's 50, 60 strands of flu. They put 12 in it that they randomly guess might be right. It's not right. It's only 20% effective. It pretty much does nothing but make a fortune for drug companies.
All right, Chris, thank you for the advice.
Yeah, thank you.
I've heard some of this before. I think it's solid. Vitamin D, vitamin C, zinc, sleep. Turn up that humidity in your house.
Humidifier, definitely.
Yeah. All right. Thank you for the call.
That was a missing piece. Once I discovered that humidifier thing, I said, aha, because it so happens that I don't like dry air, and I, without knowing this, I tend to keep the humidity high. So, now that's probably another thing that's helping.
There we go. All right, Chris, thank you for your call. We'll talk again soon.
Yep, you're welcome.
Thanks, Chris. Have a good night.
It's Lent, by the way, Shay. Did you know that?
I did.
How's Lent treating you?
The Catholic guilt is real.
Nice. It's Ash Wednesday.
The Catholic guilt hasn't worked. Like, it hasn't guilted me into, like, going to church today or not eating meat. But it is very palpable in my brain.
Did you get yourself some pancakes yesterday?
Some pancakes?
Yeah. Shrove Tuesday. Eat pancakes.
I've never heard that in my life.
Apparently, it's a thing. And IHOP was giving out free pancakes yesterday. So
the only thing I know about Fat Tuesday is, like, boobs and beads.
Yeah,
like,
no, that's Mardi Gras.
Boobs
we're talking
and
about
beads.
Shrove Tuesday, when you're supposed to eat unleavened bread. And apparently pancakes count. So
they count as unleavened. Oh God, that is a freaking stretch.
But anyway, I woke up.
I have the word freaking stuck in my head. I woke up
to this delightful story this morning. This is from Reuters. Pope to Catholics, for Lent, give up trolling. During Lent...
That's kind of genius.
During Lent, Catholics are called on to give up something like sweets. On Wednesday, Pope Francis added a modern twist to the list of things to quit during the season and beyond, insulting people on social media. The Pope made his appeal to tone things down while speaking to tens of thousands of people in St. Peter's Square for his general audience on Ash Wednesday, the start of the 40-day season that leads up to Easter. Lent, he said in partially improvised remarks, quote, is a time to give up useless words, gossip, rumors, tittle-tattle, and speak to God on a first-name basis, he said. Quote, we live in an atmosphere polluted by too much verbal violence, too many offensive and harmful words, which are amplified by the internet. Today, people insult each other as if they were saying good day. She's right. He's got a point.
Yeah.
In recent years, Francis himself has been the butt of insults from ultra-conservative Catholic websites and mostly anonymous anti-Pope Twitter feeds. Twitter has also become a platform for sometimes pitched verbal battles between his supporters and detractors. Later on Wednesday, Francis was due to have ashes rubbed on his forehead at a traditional Ash Wednesday service that reminds Christians of mortality and that everyone will someday become dust.
Okay, what
will you give up the trolling for Lent?
I don't troll in the first place.
What are you giving up for Lent?
What am I giving up for Lent? That's toughy. I'd say carbs, but I already really don't eat them that much, and I've had them twice today. I'd say it's probably all anything I'd give up is like something super cheesy and girly.
Crowds. I'm giving up crowds. That may have something to do with
crowds.
May have something to do with the coronavirus, but I'm giving up crowds.
I'd say the coronavirus and like that your house is about to get more crowded.
Marty Walsh is in charge. I can't be out in public with people because it's we're all gonna die. Marty Walsh is in charge.
I'd say I'm giving up caring what other people think. That's what I'm gonna give up.
But are you giving up trolling? See, that'd be a tough one for you. You troll a lot.
I don't troll a lot.
You're a troll.
I used to troll.
Joel Simpkins
is a
troll.
And then I learned my lesson from trolling.
Well, that's the thing,
that falls under the umbrella of not caring about what other people think.
Yeah.
Because if I don't care what other people think, there's nothing for me
Although
to troll
Joel
about.
Trolls people by playing Yes music. Which is an entirely different way of trolling.
I'm actually starting to make a living by doing that, too.
What was I going to say? I do find it incredibly ironic, like, to hear he's been a victim of trolling from super conservative Catholics.
Yeah.
I remember Like, it just makes me think of when I used to, I think I've talked on the air about that I am a recovering Catholic. But I, you know, altar server, went to church every Sunday, the whole shebang. But I'll always remember, like, Sunday mornings, we'd be leaving church and somebody would cut my mother off and she would say, "That wasn't very Christian of them." And, like, just the beautiful irony of, like, these hardcore Christians, like, blasting at the Pope. It's like, does that really feel very WWJD to you to, yeah, like, yell at the Pope?
Yeah.
Like, does that seem like the Christian way?
Well, you know, if he's blaspheming, although he's the Pope, I don't know that it's possible for him to blaspheme.
I was going
to
say, that's the thing, is that he's the Pope. I mean, as they say in the Family Guy, oh my God, I'm on my grandparents. As they say in the Family Guy episode, though, about the Pope, they go, "Can you really do that?" He goes, "I'm a the freaking Pope.
Yeah, like,
I can do whatever I want."
It is WMFO Medford on the Tell Mikey D, coming your way in 34 minutes now, just about 34 minutes. Before that, we're going to try and get you caught up on some entertainment news right after this here on WMFO Medford.
"What awful small affair.
What do you, what?
To the girl with the mousy hair. But her mommy is yelling no. And her daddy has told her to go. But her friend is nowhere to be seen. Now she walks through her sunken dream. To the seat with the clearest view. And she's hooked to the silver screen. But the film is a sad thing for, for she's lived it 10 times or more. She could spit in the eyes of fools as they ask her to focus on sailors fighting in the dance hall. Is there life on Mars?"
WMFO Medford, 91.5 FM. It is The Big Picture. We're switching over to talk of entertainment, movies and such. One thing that you're going to want to have if you do find yourself quarantined for 2 weeks is some good movies to watch. And if you've got a streaming service, you're all set. You can just binge your heart out for 2 weeks. I honestly don't think it would be as bad as most people would make it out to be. Your mileage may vary. You know, you may be stuck at home with people that you really just don't want to be around 24 hours a day for 2 weeks. If so, well, those are the choices that you made. You know, it is for the public good. Did you see anything this past week, Shay?
So I've decided to, both of my parents are doing this, which, like, as a movie person, I feel shamed into doing now too, which is to watch every movie that was nominated for Best Picture.
Oh yeah. Well, Molly and I did all that before, you know, but yeah.
So I'm starting up. I started Light by, I watched, not Light really, but I watched Marriage Story on Netflix.
Yeah, that's super light.
I don't know. Like, I thought it was really, really good. It was good for being exactly what it was. Let me put it that way. It's not like it was anything super, like, in terms of being nominated for Best Picture, it wasn't anything super freaking ground. I can't get the word freaking out of my head tonight. It wasn't anything super groundbreaking or, like, you know, there was nothing about it that was, that screamed Academy Awards, except maybe the one that it won, which was Best Supporting Actress. But I think for what, for the emotions that it was trying to convey, like, it conveyed what that's like very, as, again, speaking as someone who hasn't gone through a divorce, but speaking as someone who has been in a family in the midst of divorce,
yeah,
I think that all the emotions involved were very, were very well displayed.
I liked it better when it was called Kramer versus Kramer and had Dustin Hoffman and Meryl Streep in it. I honestly, and not to take anything away from Adam Driver's performance, because he's mind-blowing in that film.
Yeah.
He's really good. And Scarlett Johansson, everybody in the film is really good. The script is really good. But it's one of those films that you sit there and you watch it, and at the end of it, you just sort of say, why does this exist?
It exists for... for people like me who've been the kid, and for people like the two parents who have been the two parents. It's because that's the thing, is that, I mean, and having had some experience over the past year with someone I'm close to going through a divorce, the range of very contradictory emotions. Like, I'd say, and I already kind of knew this, but this film, like, really drove it home in terms of, like, there's all these emotions you're feeling that theoretically are at odds with each other. You think they should be mutually exclusive, but they're not when it comes to divorce. Like, and that, and in terms of things that can happen in your life that can make that happen, I think that that's probably the number one event of it. Like, there's a scene, what was I going to say? There's a scene where the two of them are fighting. A scene where Adam Driver and Scarlett Johansson are fighting, and they're arguing. It's towards the end of the movie, but they're really kind of throwing it all out on the table, and there is so much hate and so much love in, like, just in existence at the exact same time. Like, it's really, that scene is what made me go, okay, as much as it maybe doesn't contend with the other ones that were there, this scene right here is why this was nominated for an Academy Award. Like, just because it really, it's so perfectly encapsulated, like, just the range of, like I said, of completely conflicting emotions that take place during a divorce. And you never, there was never a moment in the film, which I liked very much too. Like, once they, there was never a moment where you thought they should never have been married, while simultaneously never having been a moment that you thought they should get back together.
But there's, if you approach the film as a masterclass in acting, And as a masterclass in scene study, yes, there's absolutely a reason for it to exist. And that scene that you talk about is incredibly powerful.
Yeah.
But the film hangs on this central idea that the reason the marriage is ending is because their lives are going in different directions. And it never really does justice to that.
Well, I don't think it's so much that... I don't think it's so much that their lives are going in different directions as it is that their lives changing made it, suddenly very clear that they had always been going in different
directions. Neither one of them, but going back into the history of it, there was clearly a strong relationship between the two of them.
Yeah.
And yet we were at this point where neither one of them is willing to sacrifice where they're going in their lives.
Yeah, like literally physically.
Physically, for the sake of this relationship and for the sake of being parents to this child. That's hugely fertile ground to explore, and it all kind of gets left in the background.
Well, I think that it was like intentionally kind of left because it's, I think, like, New York and LA were supposed to be symbolic. They were like the physical places that they are, but at the same time they were also, I mean,
it's the next step in the career is what it is.
Yeah.
For each of them.
Yeah.
You know, and you have to split up to make that work.
Yeah.
And this is the thing. It's the choice between career and family and what is more meaningful and what is legacy. And, you know, what about this other person that's in the middle of this whole thing? That to me is a much more compelling story than what you get, which is, you know, we probably never should get married in the first place. There were always things I hated about you. It reduces all of the complex themes that hover over it down into these extended arguments between these two characters, and kind of does a disservice to a much better premise. But that's me.
See, I kind of took it as that was, like I said, like that was purposely done because we're not watching the marriage collapse. When we get there, the marriage has collapsed.
Yeah.
Like, when we get there, it's over. Like, that's the thing is, I think the movie was intentionally looking at this small scope of time, or can be a long scope of time. I mean, this took a little over a year if you follow, like, the timeline of it. But essentially looking at this period in a family, in a relationship, in a biographical timeline, that a lot of times, if you think historically and think of films, a lot of times is kind of glossed over. You know what I mean? It's very rare that a movie will put the spotlight on the actual divorce, just the divorce, just hiring of lawyers and all of the little,
which was Kramer versus Kramer.
Things.
The reason that movie was
such a big deal.
It was very timely when it came out because
divorce was a relatively new.
There was an epidemic of divorce in the United States.
Not new thing, but it was a new thing to be in the norm.
Yeah, and it was something that a lot of people could relate to.
But I think that this takes us a step further because, especially given that we are living, like Kramer versus Kramer, if I remember correctly, they both live in New York City.
Yes.
This...
in an apartment that they actually could have afforded, unlike, this is another one of those movies where they're living
where
in an apartment.
Yeah, where you're like, how are you doing that when you're a theater director?
How much money? Well, theater directors make good money, you know? I don't think if you split the household finances, one of them on their own is keeping that apartment.
Oh, yeah. And having another apartment in L.A.
Yeah.
But I think that this speaks to the need for, I mean, this was a modern divorce. You know what I mean? Like, this was a 2020 divorce. This was the man and the woman both had their own career paths. This was it is possible to live bicoastally. Like, or it is possible to just up and move really quickly as well. It took into account a lot of factors that maybe weren't in existence when Kramer and Kramer came out, and the reality of, and I mean, it really did. It brought in a lot of things that unless you've gone through this, you wouldn't know. Like the fact that she filed for divorce in LA was very significant. And I would never, if I had not seen this film, I never would have, that something like that never would have occurred to me.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that it's something that has definitely put people's lives in peril. But something so simple as, oh, I'm going to get a lawyer here instead of a lawyer here. But yeah, I thought it was just a very, watching it felt like looking through a hidden peephole in a wall at something that I normally wouldn't get a glimpse at. That's what it felt like.
I say it's worth it for the outstanding performances.
And the acting is just, I mean, it's been a long time since I've believed someone that much.
Yeah.
You know, and even just subtle looks on their faces.
Yeah. I mean, they're
and
both.
And I've always been a Scarlett Johansson fan. I
think her acting talent gets short shrift because
she's so hot.
Well, no, she does the big, blockbuster movies. Yeah. She does the Marvel movies and she does the blockbusters. And it's an easy way to get your acting talent overlooked.
Yeah. Because you can.
But then she goes and does something small like Her or this Marriage Story, and you're reminded that, like, you know what? Scarlett Johansson's a really good actress.
Yeah, she's very, I was going to say, like, that's the thing, is she's very good at being subtle yet effective, and this movie is an excellent example of that. Like, there, because again, like I said, the emotions that were surrounding a divorce were just so, so well displayed watching this, and in a lot of ways, because of the subtleness, because there's a kid involved and there was a lot of the kind of underlying, not in front of the kid, but like them still getting across, you could see in their faces what they were thinking and then what they were saying and how they were saying it. Like, it just, that's why, like, as much as it's not, you know, this wasn't a groundbreaking concept for a movie.
Right.
for what it was really well done. And like a lot of thought was put into very, very simple, seemingly easily overlooked things. And it did, I mean, I'll be honest with you. Like, I mean, my parents got divorced. I've known people who got divorced. Like I said, I was close to somebody who just was going through the process and, you know, kind of feeling out all of the options. And I've never, watching this movie made me understand a lot more, all that goes into it. Because, you know, you think about it, and yes, it's a marriage, and obviously marriage is very serious, but you think about it in a, well, but it's over, so just accept that it's over kind of way when you're not in the middle of it. But even just little things like, I don't want to spoil too much, but this, you know that they get divorced at the beginning of the movie. I'm not, like, it's the whole movie. I'm not spoiling anything. But even little things, like there's a scene where she can't get her gate shut and he comes over to help her get her gate shut and she notices he needs a haircut and gives him a haircut. It's like those things don't just go away. Right. And they're like in the middle of a contentious divorce while this is happening. And it really, like, seeing that firsthand. And I've been, you know, I've been in serious relationships that have broken up before, and I've had that of my own. I mean, my boyfriend of a couple years, we had already decided to break up and still celebrated our 2-year anniversary. Like, you know, like it, I can see that. But when there's the legal stuff tacked on top of it, it's really, it was just a really, for me especially, it was just, it was a movie that really made me think. It made me think that I was getting, like I said, it felt like looking through people into an aspect of life that I would not, and, you know, knock on wood, will not see. And I think that it's important even when a simple movie can do that for you, because there have been lots of movies that I've seen that maybe we're trying to do that. We're trying to leave the viewer with a kind of feeling that failed miserably.
Yeah.
And this one, they're just, like I said, the attention to, like, little details that you would overlook if you weren't in it. Like, the things that it made you go, oh, my God, like, that is a thing that was probably an issue, like, for blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean? Like, it really, I like when a movie, because I'll tell you, like, I watched this because, like I said, I want to see all the nominees. And I had a very busy past week. So I was like, what can I watch that I won't have to, like, go to the movie? Oh, right. One of them is on Netflix. But, like, I wasn't looking forward to watching this movie. I really thought I was going to hate it and not enjoy it and have it. And I thought it was going to bring up some bad stuff for me, to be honest. But it, I really, like, I'm very glad that I watched it. And it's especially, I mean, if you're listening and, like, either you've been through a divorce yourself or, like, you've been there for somebody who was going through one and you'd like to understand it more, totally watch this movie. Because it is. It's enlighteningly heartbreaking, but in a way that doesn't make you want to kill yourself.
Yeah. But not light Saturday afternoon.
But, yeah, I wouldn't watch it when you feel like having a blast with your friends.
Monday night glass of wine movie.
Yeah, I was going to say. It's
Monday
it's
night a, bottle of wine movie.
It's a contemplate by the fire while you watch it kind of movie.
If you are a fan, and Shay's not, and you don't care about this, The Clone Wars is back.
Oh, yeah.
The final season.
Could not care less.
Final season has begun on Disney+. If you're into it, you're into it. It's good. It's as good.
I can appreciate why somebody who's into that crap likes it.
It's as good as the rest of the Clone Wars, at least in episode one. So go check that out. You'll be happy. Did you expect anything less from it? So I'm going to move on from that. That doesn't need,
dear God.
That doesn't need any in-depth exploration other than to say
Watch it.
And if you have Disney+ and you love the Clone Wars, watch it. You're going to love it. It sets up a lot of great stuff.
Get on it.
Let's talk about something that may be more interesting to people. The Somerville Theater.
Is people, Shay.
It's right down the street from us here. not too far away in Davis Square, Somerville.
Super lovely place.
Has begun to announce the titles for their 2020 70mm and widescreen festival.
Ooh, yeah.
Now, for those who don't know, the Somerville Theater has a 70mm projector. They never got rid of their 70mm projector. So they're actually set up to show this stuff in ways that other theaters are not. And films deserve to be seen in 70mm. And hold damn.
Oh, I am digging on this.
We got some good stuff. So it's going to run from May 22nd to May 31st. You can find out more at SomervilleTheater.com. Excuse me. Let me share some of what they got going. Friday, May 22nd. Bring snacks. They'll show it with the intermission. Lawrence of Arabia in 70mm. I will tell you right now that if there is one film on this list that absolutely deserves to be seen in 70mm, it is Lawrence of Arabia. Originally shot in CinemaScope, the film is in almost every home version of the film either cuts off the edges of it or has to run the film so narrow in the middle of the screen
that everyone's short and fat
that you can't really see any detail. You know, it's sort of like, I wish this was bigger. Go see that on a big screen. Because that movie was made to be seen on a big screen. I think David Lean was the director of Lawrence of Arabia. The cinematography in it is spectacular.
And isn't it Elizabeth Taylor?
No, this is the one with Malcolm McDowell.
Oh, yeah.
Lawrence of Arabia, spectacular film in 70mm. They're also going to have E.T., the extraterrestrial.
That's what's on my list.
I've seen it in 70mm, so it doesn't...
See, I haven't.
Yeah. This one, however, 2001 A Space Odyssey in 70mm. Stanley Kubrick. Yes. And they're also going to have Interstellar. That's all on May 23rd. 2001 A Space Odyssey, for me, is the one that really stands out. May 26th, they're not going to be, I guarantee you, they're not going to have it in Sensoround. Earthquake, which was, at the time when it came out.
I was going to say, when did that come out?
1974, I believe, for Earthquake. It was the first Sensoround film. And Sensoround was only used for about three movies. And Sensoround, they basically put these massive bass speakers
so that you could
in back
kinda...
of the screen. Yeah, and they'd crank them up all the way, and you would feel it vibrating through. So Earthquake is out of the, you know, Irwin Allen disaster movie genre.
I mean, that would be pretty awesome to see, just given that so many of us millennial folk have only ever seen the CGI disaster movies.
Like, this is all practical effects. It's campy fun, is the way that I'd put that.
Oh, mama loves some camp.
Speaking of campy fun, The Last Action Hero, cult classic. I was into that movie before anybody. I was into that movie when everybody still hated it.
Oh, you're being such a hipster right now.
I guess I was back in the early 90s when I liked that. Streets of Fire.
I would say, I remember hearing about, Schwarzenegger.
And finally, The Hateful Eight. I have seen that version of the movie at that theater, and I can tell you that it is spectacular. It is so good in 70mm. But Streets of Fire, man, that's I don't want to say that's a hot film to see in 70mm because that's bad.
I was going to say, pun intended.
Last Action Hero, yeah, it's got some big action set pieces. You know, it really, Last Action Hero has become a cult film because of how bad it is.
Well, and I mean,
but it's really not that bad. I don't know.
It's probably what we kids would say, awesomely bad.
Yeah, I don't think a lot of people
like
got
it's like cheesetastic, but like in a good way.
It is, when we talk about the Saturday afternoon movie that you just want to throw on and like have a couple of beers and really just sort of like geek out to a movie. Last Action Hero was that movie during the 1990s.
Yeah, like, for those of you who aren't familiar with it, I'll just read the one sentence description of it. With the help of a magic ticket, a young movie fan is transported into the fictional world of his favorite action movie character. And who would your favorite action movie character, like your favorite fictional action movie character, be played by? Arnold Schwarzenegger, because of course it would.
And who's the bad guy?
Who is the bad guy?
Alan Rickman.
Oh, that makes it even better.
Yeah, it's just beginning to end. It's perfect. It is a perfect satire of the big action movie of the 1980s and the early 1990s. I love it.
Oh, and is it Brad Renfro?
Yes, Brad Renfro is a little boy, I believe. I think that was his first screen role. So it's got a fun cast. It's a fun little movie.
I was going to say, I'd see that.
Good special effects. People who know, know. So that's some of what's coming to Somerville. Weekend box office, very, very briefly. Call of the Wild did not outperform Sonic the Hedgehog. So computer-generated hedgehog beats out computer-generated
dog.
What kind of dog is that?
Is it a husky?
I think it's a Saint Bernard.
Saint Bernard. Call of the Wilds. What kind of dog?
Whatever it is, it made $1 million less than the hedgehog. That's in week two, by the way, for the hedgehog.
Yeah, he has a Saint Bernard Scotch Collie mix.
Yeah, so Call of the Wild, not a good opening. It's probably not going to make money. Brahms, The Boy 2, yeah, that did $5.8 million. That is going to make money, believe it or not.
People really liked the first one.
Knives Out, still in theaters. Pulled in $1 million over the weekend.
I'm not surprised. Knives Out is perfect for exactly what I did with it, which is I went by myself with snacks stuffed into my pockets on a Saturday afternoon, and I had a glorious time. It was wonderful. I enjoyed every second of that day.
It's also available now on Redbox, so you don't have to go to the theater to see it, but you can if you want to.
I might go again anyway.
Emma, limited release, pulled in a per screen average of... is that a 6 or an 8? That's a 6 of nearly $47,000. That will be opening wider. So people are liking the Emma. And Star Wars, still in theaters.
Still in theaters.
Dude,
that came out like before Christmas.
They won't let the Star Wars die. Although it's running out of theaters rapidly. And
it's getting to the point of like, all right, are we done?
Yeah, for some reason, A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood is still in theaters. But Star Wars pulled in $566,000 over the weekend. So Star Wars. It is WMFO Medford. When we come back, only one movie this week for See It, Stream It, Skip It, because there's only one movie opening. We'll give you our verdict on it right after this here on WMFO Medford.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Would you please lower your aerial when entering Universal Studios Car Wash?
Car Wash. A typical day in L.A. Car Wash, yeah. Mr. Richard Pryor is Daddy Rich.
Praise the Lord! Praise the Lord! Yeah. Why don't you climb on board and believe in me? Because it's better to have money and not to need it than to need it not to have it.
Well, praise this car, honey.
Thank you,
Miss. Franco Najai, Professor Irwin Corey, and George Carlin as the cabbie.
We will go anywhere. We are not yellow. Get it? It's no kind of a slur in the Chinese or anything like that.
Special guest, the Pointer Sisters, and a full disco soundtrack. From Universal Pictures, it's a clean movie.
Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested.
Okay, gang. So, chances are there'll never be an emergency ever, ever again.
Mm-hmm.
But, just in case, let's talk about a plan.
Okay.
So, who's gonna do what? Anyone? Yeah, okay, perfect. We'll figure it out as we go. So, who is going to grab the go bag?
What's a go bag?
It is a bag we do not have that is filled with things we really, really need in an emergency.
Guess we won't have to worry about it then.
Ah, good point. So, we all know who to call if something happens then, right?
I'd have to call Jill, Devin, Melissa, Karen, and... Bruce.
And I will try to call all of you, but Greg doesn't have a cell phone. Dad's phone will have a dead battery.
No doubt.
And Julie will be on the phone with Jill, Devin, Melissa, Karen, and Bruce.
Well, this is great. I am so glad that we don't have a plan.
I know.
Winging It is not an emergency plan. Make sure your kids know what to do during an emergency, who to call, where to meet, what to pack. Visit ready.gov/kids for tips and information. A public service announcement brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Let's go!
WMFO Medford, 91.5 FM. You are listening to The Big Picture. I am Shay Spillane. With me, as always, is the illustrious Derek Gary. We're wrapping things up here. But before we go, we're going to play See It, Stream It, Skip It, where we talk about the movies that are opening this weekend. This weekend, it's just one.
Yeah, there's only one wide opening movie this weekend.
Yeah, but then we tell you if we would see it, stream it, or skip it. So, what's our one movie?
One new, Emma's going to be expanding this weekend, so you'll have an opportunity to go see that, maybe closer to home if you haven't seen it yet. But this weekend gives us The Invisible Man.
Yes.
You might be familiar with this story, but you're probably not familiar with this updated version of it.
Yes.
In this version, our Invisible Man is a stalker and a bad boyfriend who commits suicide, leaves everything to his girlfriend, and then begins haunting her because he's an invisible man. And she suspects maybe he's not dead. Maybe he's just invisible.
Okay, you're making it sound way stupider than this.
It's stupid.
Oh, it's pretty stupid.
It's stupid.
But you're making it sound like a more pitiful kind of stupid than it is. It's, honestly, I would see this. It gives me a very What Lies Beneath-ish vibe. You ever seen What Lies Beneath?
Why not just go see What Lies Beneath?
Because it's no longer in theaters, and this is.
Okay, well, you can rent it, or you can, it's probably on streaming,
but
actually.
This is the sort of movie that is, like, perfect for middle-aged women who want to see something scary, but don't want to see Saw. You know what I mean?
I guess, but...
Like I said, I would see this in theaters because movies like this, The Jump, is a lot better with a big screen, though.
But to me, I look at this, and it just looks like another, you know, Blumhouse, low budget. You've seen these actors before, but you can't place where you've seen them.
Was she in a Toyota commercial?
Yeah, a few jump scares and a lot of atmosphere, but not really a horror movie.
It's a thriller.
You know. Yeah, but it's...
It's got 90% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Thriller is a horror movie without blood. That's the difference. Thriller is a horror movie without blood and guts all over the screen.
No, a thriller is a movie that's horrifying for the mind, not for the eyes.
Silence of the Lambs is considered a thriller.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. It's horrifying for the mind, not necessarily... some parts of Silence of the Lambs are gross, but it's not gratuitously.
You know, I don't know what they did with... Gone Girl. I don't know if that was classified as a horror movie or a thriller, but that sex scene with Neil Patrick Harris definitely put it in a horror movie territory. Yeah, I understand there's an audience for this. There are better versions of this story, including the Paul Verhoeven, Kevin Bacon version that came out, you know, 15 odd years ago, which doesn't quite live up to the Verhoeven standard at the end, but is still a pretty entertaining ride until you get to that point. I'm just not necessarily, first of all, I don't know that I'm buying a guy who's so wrapped up in this woman that he's going to use groundbreaking technology just to harass her.
This is what one review says that I think sums it up well. The Invisible Man interlocks the real-world distress felt by many women while giving face to the demons men would rather think only exist in handfuls today.
Yeah, see, this is the thing, you know. Hey, white men are evil. White men are everything that's wrong with the world.
You really are.
That's what this movie is selling. This movie is selling white male bad,
but
toxic masculinity. I don't need it.
But women gon' buy it.
Some women are going to buy it. Well, you're going to buy it, obviously.
Oh, I'm going to buy it because I like thrillers and going in the movie theater.
Yeah. But you could go see the Blumhouse thing. You could go see, there's so many movies that you could go see that just have mountains of that right
this,
now. Go see Fantasy Island. Go see
the
Brahms.
At the end of the day, the reason I chose to read this review and say what he said about it is that is really what it is that, yes, the invisible part, totally far-fetched and stupid, but the guy being so crazy, like pulling this crapness, has a real feel of realness to it. A doll possessing a house, not so much. Like, This is something that you can actually, it's like, I like things like this. I go two directions with scary. I like campy, stupid horror movies, you know, like Friday the 13th. Or I like stuff like this where it's like my brain sits there going, okay, yeah, that part of the premise isn't real, but like, this feels very real.
I think you need to reassess your hatred of men. That's all the time that we have.
I only hate some men.
This week, we